From retail to e-tail.
Welcome to Cyber Monday.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It is Monday, November 29th. Coming up, France tries to become the global hub of video games. And what's the greenest way to get rid of your leaves?
But first, let's find out how retailers fared over the big shopping weekend and how e-tailers might fare today as online holiday shopping clicks up a notch for Cyber Monday. Marshall Cohen is chief retail analyst at the NPD Group, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, how did retailers do over the big shopping weekend, Marshall?
Retailers actually stepped it up a notch this year. They did pretty well. Consumers went out in record numbers, and actually even not only did they shop, but they also purchased. They were gobbling up all kinds of bargains. The better the bargain, the more likely they were to buy.
Everybody wanted the bargains, and a lot of retailers were offering these big discounts. What does that do, Marshall, to the low-cost retailers like Walmart and TJ Maxx that are always offering discounts? Do they suffer?
Well, the mass merchants that were in the doorbuster deal game did very well. The other off-price retailers like TJ Maxx and Marshalls, their day is still yet to come. The consumers go to shop at the full-price retailers that are offering the big discounts, and then in the next 2 weeks, they'll be heading into the discount outlet stores to be able to gobble up some of those good deals.
So that day is yet to come. Now, today, as we said, is Cyber Monday. This is the day that people allegedly go online at work and start to buy things. Does Cyber Monday, now that it's so easy for everyone to go online and buy things anytime, does Cyber Monday still have the importance that it did, or is every day kind of Cyber Buy Day?
Great question. This year, Cyber Monday is going to be even more important than the hype that it was really led to be. It's the busiest shopping day online, but it wasn't always the busiest purchasing day. But retailers this year, both brick-and-mortar retailers with online sites, as well as pure-play retailers that only have commerce online, are going to be offering very competitive deals. So look for this year to be a very important day, but even more, an important week. Retailers are extending the sales beyond just today alone.
Okay, Marshall Cohen, chief retail analyst at the NPD Group.
Maybe you'll head online at your work computer today to do a little shopping, or maybe you'll just do it on your smartphone. Turns out the amount of data passing through mobile phone networks here in the United States doubles every year. People watching YouTube, checking Facebook, and surfing the web, maybe for a Cyber Monday deal. Well, that adds up to about three-quarters of the mobile system's bandwidth. And Marketplace's Steve Henn reports from Silicon Valley on how cell carriers are struggling to keep up.
Data traffic on cell phone networks will hit an exabyte by the end of the year. Now, that word probably doesn't mean much to you, but it's more than 18,000 times the amount of information contained in all the books ever written. Chetan Sharma is a cell phone industry analyst.
What's happening is the pace with which the devices, or broadband devices, are coming into the market has accelerated.
And Sharma says it's not just phones that are hooking into mobile phone networks.
Any device that can be broadband-enabled will be broadband-enabled.
Cars and cameras and toys are connecting. To keep up, cell phone companies are going to have to build new networks at a breakneck pace. Customers are going to have to get used to drop calls and capped data plans. And ultimately, Sharma says the FCC will need to sell more spectrum to carry the load. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Illinois will try to sell bonds today as it grapples with a multi-billion-dollar budget gap. States trying to balance their budgets usually face two options. They can either raise taxes or cut spending. But as Marketplace's Gregory Warner reports, Illinois is taking a creative new approach using a familiar source of cash, tobacco.
46 states receive money every year from legal settlements with big tobacco to cover those states' extra medical costs. Today, Illinois will start selling bonds on those annual payments, promising investors that money later so the state can have the cash now. Matt Fabian is managing director at Municipal Market Advisors. He says compared to other accounting schemes that states have tried,
you know, whole tiers and strata of gimmickry, the tobacco financing isn't a bad one.
Other gimmicks states have tried include tapping into roadwork budgets and selling office buildings, only to lease them. Illinois hopes to raise $1.5 billion from its tobacco bond sale to pay overdue debts to schools and businesses. Here's the catch. The amount of tobacco money a state receives each year is tied to how many cigarettes are shipped in the state.
And how many cigarettes are shipped depends on the health of the local economy, how high the states and local governments have raised cigarette taxes, and how many smokers have died, frankly.
So light up, Chicago. You just might be helping city schools buy new textbooks. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
One Japanese fruit company says a good way to ripen bananas with a richer and fuller flavor is to play Mozart around them. The company sells bunches of bananas ripened to Mozart's String Quartet 17 and Piano Concerto 5 in D major. Now, the theory is Mozart's music features a high-frequency sound above 8,000 hertz, and that it relaxes humans. So the company says it must relax bananas, too, which apparently sweetens them. Or at least sweetens the bottom line. The company sells the Mozart bananas for more than the non-classically trained bananas. You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, November 29th. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org.
We're going to get a take now on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects us here in the United States.
It's official. Late yesterday, European leaders announced a bailout for Ireland worth more than $113 billion. The hope is, of course, the injection of cash will stabilize the banks in Ireland and calm markets around the world. It doesn't seem to be calming the Irish people, though, as Christopher Worth reports from London.
This was the sound of demonstrators in the Dublin streets over the weekend. But as unpopular as the bailout is, the protests aren't about the European rescue package in and of itself.
Obviously, people are opposed to, you know, pain. But it's why are people opposed? You know, they don't want to shoulder the burden for private investors.
That's Brian Lucy, a finance professor at Trinity College, Dublin. People in Ireland may be embarrassed by the need for a bailout after the country had grown at such a stellar rate over the past couple of decades. But what they're angry about is unfairly paying for the mistakes of wealthy individuals who invested in Ireland's banks during the boom years. When the crisis began in 2008, the Irish government guaranteed those investors against any losses. That's why Ireland needs the bailout it's getting today. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Today in Cancun, Mexico, 192 countries start their annual conference on climate change. Over the next 2 weeks, countries will try to rebuild momentum toward a global deal on carbon emissions after they failed to reach a deal last year in Copenhagen. Let's bring in Marketplace's Eve Tro from our sustainability desk. She's in Cancun for the conference. Good morning, Eve.
Good morning.
So what's at stake for the U.S. at this conference?
Well, last year, President Obama swept in, and he helped broker this 11th-hour agreement. That was in Copenhagen. He won't be here in Cancun. Instead, Todd Stern is leading the U.S. He's the special envoy for climate change. He says the many climate change skeptics just elected into Congress won't change the way he negotiates. But they could actually have a drastic effect on climate change funding that the U.S. promised in Copenhagen last year. And, of course, anything the U.S. signs in Cancun has to be enacted in large part by that Congress as well. I talked to Eric Carlson at carbonfund.org. He says the U.S. should have stayed home.
I think at this point, the U.S. presence is a distraction and overall a negative. It's time for the international community to step up and cut a deal and get this done.
And Eve, set the scene for us. What is the feeling there on the ground so far?
Well, Mexico considers itself a leader for clean energy in the developing world, and it's really putting on a show to prove that. The conference shuttle buses are on biodiesel. There's this one huge wind turbine that we've been told is recently built, definitely supposed to be a symbol for climate change action. But it looks a little lonely standing there by itself. So the show goes on.
Okay, Marketplace's Eve Tro in Cancun, and there's a website that we've just unveiled on our sustainability page. It's got more than 100 tips on reducing your energy and water use. Eve, I'm sure we'll be talking to you in the next couple of weeks. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The video game industry has become one of the fastest growing sectors in entertainment, worth billions of dollars. And the French buy more video games than anybody else other than the U.S., Britain, and Japan. Now, France's government is trying to cultivate the video game industry with tax breaks. From Paris, reporter Daniel Finnan has more.
More than 120,000 people visited Paris's first Computer Games Week at the end of October. Los Angeles, Cologne, and Tokyo host similar events. And France does not want to be left behind its international competitors in this lucrative field. But trade unions say it just might. though not for lack of talent.
And in France, we have between 5,000 to 7,000 people which are producing games.
Stéphane Nadkin is the founder of the French National School of Games and Interactive Media.
I think everybody, even the political of both sides, right and left, knows that games is something which is very important and that they have to support and understand.
The French government gives 20% tax relief on games produced by French studios. But many firms in the industry say taxes are too high. John Parks is the managing director of France's biggest video game developer, Ubisoft. He says a 20% tax incentive isn't enough to keep French game developers in the country.
In Canada, it can be anything up to 50%.
Ubisoft employs more than 6,000 people worldwide and produces games such as the popular Assassin's Creed series. Parks says it needs tax breaks so it can pay the top-class games programmers it needs to stay competitive and innovative.
And innovation means you need the best people with the best ideas and the best quality, ultimately, in developing your games.
It's not certain that Parks and his colleagues will get the expanded tax breaks they're looking for. But the video game industry has some important supporters here. President Nicolas Sarkozy has described it as a strategic growth area for France and one with the potential to become a major art form in the 21st century. In Paris, I'm Daniel Finan for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, November 29th. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. For the latest look at the markets, you can go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Well, maybe you got lucky and spent the holiday weekend relaxing with family, or maybe you spent the weekend cooking, cleaning, and raking leaves with family. Steve, which one was it for you?
Neither, actually sleeping.
You were working. Sleeping. You were working the
and,
whole
and
time.
And working and sleeping,
that's
Jeremy.
Right.
That's right.
Well, it turns out on the raking leaves issue that many of us are not getting rid of our leaves in a very green way. Let's bring in Amy Palangian. She's deputy editor of Ready Made magazine, and she's with us from Des Moines, Iowa. Good morning.
Good morning.
What should people do? What is the most sustainable way to get rid of leaves?
The most sustainable thing you can do with leaves is to compost them. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to go all out and have worms in a bin and everything in your backyard. Most towns now will compost in their landfill, so you can have your leaves picked up, which is a great thing if you have a lot of them. But if you just have a few trees that drop some leaves, it's better to use them around your yard. There are really great biodegradable bags out there that you can put your leaves in. There's one from a brand called BioBags, and it will decompose whether you send it to a landfill or it gets picked up in the trash.
And what about a leaf blower?
You know, it's not really necessary, and they can add a lot of noise pollution and also exhaust into the atmosphere. So we much prefer using rakes. I mean, you get to enjoy the outdoors and you get a little bit of exercise in the while you're at it.
If that's the sort of thing that you want, or you send your kids out there to do it for you. Amy, let me ask you this. How does the industry figure into this? I imagine that the plastic bag people and the leaf blower people have a stake in this fight.
There are more and more options of bags that do decompose. So I think that the industry is getting on board in a very green way. They want to make this as easy for people as possible. And with more municipalities composting and having efforts to be greener themselves, I think everyone has that goal in mind.
Do you ever stop over at the neighbor's house when you see them doing things the wrong way and tell them they'd be a lot more sustainable if they put their leaves in a compost pile?
You know, I actually saw my neighbors who had gotten their grandkids on board, and they were all out raking and putting their leaves in the paper bags provided by our town. So my neighbors are actually doing a pretty good job.
All right. Amy Palangian, deputy editor of Ready Made magazine. Thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
Michael Jackson's latest album will be in stores 2 weeks from tomorrow. And there is controversy surrounding whether Jackson, who died last year, wanted those songs released and whether some of the vocals on it are fake. Now, one thing we do know, the record company is looking for that album to provide a bit of a Christmas boost. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
First, you have to hear this cut from the new album, Michael.
This life don't last forever. Oh, no.
It's a song, and Sony, the company releasing it, hopes it's a sales pitch, too. Bob Lefsetz, a recording industry veteran, says the posthumous album is a classic buzz builder.
You know, everybody from Jimi Hendrix to Elvis Presley, what's his name, the rapper, you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yes, Tupac?
Tupac. No? Tupac made more records dead than he did alive.
Recording companies still rely on CDs to keep their business alive. 60% of their revenue comes from physical album sales. Keith Holzman, a recording industry consultant, says Jackson is a sure bet.
The nature of the Jackson fan, they're collectors. And yeah, they may download some, but they'll probably want to buy a CD to get whatever graphics there may be with it.
After all, an earlier Jackson album was the nation's biggest seller last year, and it was only a compilation of old hits. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, it looks like Cleveland Cavaliers fans aren't turning up the heat on LeBron James like they said they would.
Oh, man.
Of course, you remember back in July when the NBA star angered fans in his hometown by ditching Cleveland to go play for the Miami Heat.
He wanted to go to South Beach, baby. That's where he wanted to go.
Well, this week, LeBron will be back in Ohio playing against the Cavaliers, and so far, there's no evidence of a boycott at all. In fact, tickets on the popular website StubHub are averaging $234 a piece, which would be the most expensive regular season ticket in Cavaliers history.
Wow.
To which I say, you show him, Cleveland. You show LeBron what happens when he goes to South Beach. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in Los Angeles, sans LeBron James, I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.